The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt broadcasting today from Castle Gorka as Hewitt's studio went down in the terrific storms we had inside the Beltway last night. I have a wireless connection, and Xfinity decided in there that they're never going to harden the infrastructure. I think they're waiting for the Democrats to give them $1 billion. And so yesterday I had fiber cable installed at the studio, but they didn't get it done. So it's still on internet. And so I'm now at Castle Gorka. And that lovely sound you hear in your head that I will be hearing for 3 hours is that Seb has allied with Tony Stark. And they're upping the armament around Castle Gorka with Avengers-like technology.
They're rebuilding Avengers Campus.
The Avengers Campus is coming back, and it's part of Castle Gorka. And the guys are right on top of me today. If you remember Iron Man 3, when Tony Stark's house fell into the Pacific, that's basically what's going on at Castle Gorka. But we will rebuild. We will rebuild, because there's $3.5 trillion floating around that's got to be able to improve the Tony Stark, Seb Gorka project that's underway. I read from the Hill hours ago, Senate Democrats approved a budget resolution early Wednesday morning that will allow them to pass a $3.5 trillion spending plan without GOP support later this year. The Senate voted 50-49 on the budget resolution, capping off an hours-long chaotic debate on the floor, where senators voted on dozens of largely non-binding amendments that offered a preview of the fight to come. Though the budget doesn't get it signed into the law, it's the first step for bypassing the 60 votes normally required for most legislation. And therefore, they're going to try and raise massive, high, enormous taxes on everyone. They're going to try and sweep in immigration reform, an amnesty, a sweeping amnesty. They're going to try, and this was all, they all voted for it. Every Democrat is for what Mitch McConnell called a reckless tax and spending spree that will hammer workers, middle-class families, fewer jobs, lower wages, more inflation, pushing costs higher and higher. What our colleagues are proposing and planning is absolutely jaw-dropping. It is the triumph of the left. Joe Biden has gone along with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. You thought he was a moderate. He's not a moderate. Trump was mean. He had mean tweets. So you threw him out. And now we've got a $3.5 trillion tax and spending bill that dwarfs everything that has ever gone before it. It's so much money, I can't even communicate to you how much money it is. That's after the infrastructure bill, which was a trillion-dollar bill itself. John Kennedy from Louisiana went on Hannity last night talking about the infrastructure bill. They hadn't even passed the $3.5 trillion. This is only the $1 trillion bill. Cut number one, Senator Kennedy.
Sean, I am disappointed. In my opinion, we Republicans in the Senate keep finding new ways to lose on policy and to lose on politics. Opposing President Biden's infrastructure bill should have been a fat guy layup. It would take me 2 hours to outline its deficiency. I mean, from the bottom of my heart, I mean, it's real swamp stuff. They told us it was about real infrastructure. It wasn't. Calling this bill an infrastructure bill is like, it's like calling Anthony Weiner a saint. There's more Green New Deal and welfare in this bill than infrastructure. They told us the bill was paid for. It isn't. They told us the bill wouldn't raise taxes. It does. They told us the bill wouldn't contribute to inflation and higher prices. It will. They told us that it would, this bill, if we pass the infrastructure bill, it would make it harder to pass President Biden's companion bill, the $4 to $5 trillion tax and spending binge reconciliation act that we're debating right now. It will make it easier to pass that act. As you pointed out, Speaker Pelosi is so excited about the passage of the infrastructure bill, she's thinking about merging the two bills in the House. I'm telling you, the Democrats desperately wanted this infrastructure bill. They wanted it like an axe wants a turkey. They wanted it like Ben wants J-Lo. And that's just a fact. And we just got outmaneuvered. Intelligence was chasing us, and we got beat.
Well, I would have voted for the infrastructure bill only because it helps build a bulwark against this $3.5 trillion bill when it comes back in little pieces. But understand that $4.5 trillion has been spent by Democrats in 48 hours. $4.5 trillion. It is so much money. It is going to be inflation from hell. And let me check the markets, brought to you by Birch Gold. All right, I want to see what the interest rate is doing at this hour, because it might take a while to register. They might not really believe they're going to go through with it. They're going to go through with it. They really are going to go through with it. People should not, you know, the Dow went up 162 points yesterday. The S&P went up 4 and the NASDAQ went down 72. And the key thing is, though, gold is at 1734. So believe me, if you've ever thought about buying gold, buy gold today from Birch Gold, hugold.com. At 1734, when this thing kicks in, $4.5 trillion. Now, it's all, they haven't started to spend it yet. They have to wait till they get 5 or 6 more votes. But yes, last night was the big vote. They've authorized their colleagues to vote on majority basis, on 50+1, for $4.5 trillion worth of spending. And $1 trillion of it's locked in. So gold is at $1,734.40. I think the sky is the limit. I buy my gold from Birch Gold, and I'm buying more. I'm going to go to HughGold.com, or you can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Why? Because I think the dollar, if you just keep printing money, Brian Westbury is going to be on a little bit to talk about this and tell us what he thinks. The 10-year yield jumped a whole point in the last week. Well, a tenth of a point, 1.342. Now, that's still the best money you've got going around. You got to take your money and pay off your mortgage if you can, if it's a 7 or an 8%, but at least refinance it down. Do not get caught when these interest rates go up, but buy some gold. HughGold.com. Text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Now, you're all going to get checks in the mail. Everybody's going to get checks in the mail, right? Democrats are here. They're just sending money out. Well, you do one thing with the check you get in the mail, or if you're one of the 1% that paid the bill, I'm going to ask you to pay a little bit more. I'm going to ask you to help food for the poor. And that's because no matter what first world problem you have this morning, I've got jackhammers on top of me as Tony Stark expands Castle Gorka. That's a first world problem. Internet going down because of lightning storms is a first world problem. I will have lunch later today. I will have dinner tonight. I will have electricity and the air conditioning. Five-star Frankie came by the house yesterday, fixed the air conditioning after 48 hours of 90 degrees in the house. Okay, 90 degrees in the house. That's a first world problem because it will end. What isn't a first world problem is being hungry every single night. And what is going on in Haiti and Central America is so devastating. Ed Rain, who is the CEO of Food for the Poor, talks to us about Food for the Poor. And I encourage you to go over and get the banner, give food at the top of HughHewitt.com. But listen to what Ed Rain says.
And you walk away saying, wow, in some small measure, I made a difference in the life of somebody else. And isn't that what it's all about? And certainly, to me, this is about living the gospel and loving thy neighbor. That is love.
It is love. It's also urgently needed. You save lives. So you can go to HughHewitt.com, hit the Give Food button, or call 855-359-4673, 855-359-4673. And if you're on vacation or you're about to go on vacation, perhaps donate one meal and say to the kids, we're not going to eat at a restaurant tonight. We're going to have hot dogs or bring home restaurants. We're not going to eat. We're going to do a fast, and we're going to think about everyone who doesn't get vacations, everybody who's starving. And I deeply, deeply appreciate your support for that. I have some guests today. I have Westbury coming up. Brian and I are going to Atlanta on October 13. If you go to am920theanswer.com, you get tickets for that. We're going to talk about the Biden inflation. And I've got California gubernatorial candidate John Cox coming up, though Larry Elder is winning. Mike Gallagher is going to talk to us about what happens with this bill next. I have Joshua Billings coming up. As school boards collapse across the United States, Acelus Power Home School Learning is going to displace them. I got Alfredo Ortiz from Job Creators Network. I've got John Ulliott, formerly at the NSC, talking about China. I got lots ahead, but you just got to stay tuned to Hugh Hewitt, originating today from Castle Gorka with Tony Stark working on top of me. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I see Congressman Michael Waltz on Fox and Friends as we speak, talking about the collapse of Afghanistan, and it is a rapid collapse. I'm joined by John Ulliott, who is the managing partner of Brighton Strategies, but you probably know him as a spokesman for our friend O'Brien, who was at the National Security Council. John was over at the NSC for a couple of years, and before that, he was at the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, the Senate Armed Services Committee, the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee. He's been everywhere and done everything. Good morning, John. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Hugh. How's it going?
Good. I hope I'll see you tomorrow night at our favorite watering hole. I got to come downtown to our favorite watering hole, so I'll see you hopefully down there. I never don't go. I think you live there, John. Not that you have a drinking problem. I just think that you know where to hang out in the afternoon, and that's a great place to hang out. So I'll see you tomorrow.
It's a great place. It's a great place, and I'm within walking distance, put it that way.
So that beats it. I would be there every single day, but for the fact that I'm not within walking distance. John, I want to get to Afghanistan, but first, I originally scheduled to talk to you because you wrote a column for townhall.com about Secretary Austin's comments on China, and I couldn't believe it. I had missed it entirely, but I've been on vacation for 2 weeks. I really could not believe it. And so would you walk me through what he said and what he meant to say?
Sure, absolutely. It was very eye-opening, 100%. And Lloyd Austin has kept a pretty low profile for the first 6 months anyway, and, you know, his former general, and he hasn't really stepped out of his lane at DOD. And lo and behold, he and President Biden did two things last week. Number one, they declined whatsoever to give any sort of a progress report on where the investigation stands on getting to the bottom of who is responsible for the China virus. Well, we know that China, all signs point to the Wuhan lab, but that was something that Biden was sort of backed into in late May in terms of actually calling for an investigation throughout the intelligence community. And we're coming up on 2 weeks now until that report is due. It's due on the 24th of August, and there was supposed to be a 45-day report as part of this 90-day review. Absolute crickets from both Austin as well as from Biden. And Austin was over in the region in China. And the fact that he failed to mention anything about holding China accountable and getting to the bottom of that is the first problem. But the second problem is even more egregious, is that Austin, while he was there, the British have unveiled a new aircraft carrier called the Queen Elizabeth, and the Queen Elizabeth is a very impressive aircraft carrier, and she took her first voyage or her first deployment into the South China Sea. And Austin, while he was over there, said, well, you know, the British ought to really stick to other places and we'll take care of the South China Sea. Meantime, President Trump, as you know, Hugh, he put a big premium on having our allies in concert working in the South China Sea, building up the Indo-Pacific partnership. And there was, exactly the opposite from Lloyd Austin while he was there in the region.
Well, we don't have 12 carrier groups anymore. At most, we have 9 functioning at any time, given the repair. The fort is not deployed yet. We need our allies. We need India, and we need the UK, and we need Australia, we need Japan, we need every ship we can get, because the one global, Russia's got some stuff that bothers us in the Arctic, but the one global power we have to worry about is China. And I can't believe anyone's saying, don't worry, you don't have to patrol with us. We need every British bottom there that we can get.
100%, 100%, Hugh. And it actually gets worse, because breaking news overnight is that Navy Secretary, he was just sworn in on Monday night. So here's this new Navy Secretary called Carlos Del Toro. I think he's of Cuban American descent.
He's a Navy guy. I hope he's not done something dumb because he's a Navy man. Finally, we got a Navy guy running the Navy.
Exactly. No, and so you thought, and we're all cheering for him because he is a Navy guy, but the signs don't point to good things that come out of there, because his first official statement that he had as Navy Secretary, he was once again confirmed on Monday. On Tuesday, he did a first official statement identifying the Navy's, quote, most pressing challenges as four things: China, culture, climate, and COVID. Can you imagine that?
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, China, culture, climate change, and COVID. Well, anybody, Robert O'Brien or President Trump or any of President Trump's national security team under O'Brien would know that if you were the Navy Secretary, you would say something more like China, Russia, shipbuilding, where we need to get up to 355 ships, and that was a big priority for the president and for O'Brien carrying it out underneath President Trump. And then finally, building up to your point, the Indo-Pacific and our relations in terms of defending Taiwan.
What does he even mean by culture? I understand COVID, because you don't want to have another, you never want another display of a ship being immobilized like the Teddy Roosevelt had to go into Guam for a month and a half. But I understand why, but COVID is a vaccine. That's where we're going to vaccinate the military. So that's covered. I mean, they can vaccinate the Navy. That's done. Climate. Right. What does the Navy do about climate?
Well, climate it's amazing. I mean, climate is apparently reducing our carbon footprint by 2030 in line with what's being the goals that are being laid out for the private sector under President Biden. So it's this very gauzy sort of long-term programs. If you look back in the first 6 months that Biden was in office, he sent to China, his first emissary to China was John Kerry, and John Kerry was there to talk about one thing, and it was climate change and getting China on board with where we're going on climate change. And you know what, Hugh? The Chinese, as soon as Kerry went back onto his private jet or whatever he flies around in while he's lecturing people on climate change, they were absolutely laughing behind his back, because they're sitting and they're building up a Navy like we should be building up and like we set out under President Trump to get back to a 355-ship Navy with that as a top priority. And China's even exceeding that right now, and they're laughing at us because if we send our main guy over there to talk climate change, it just shows a complete gauzy focus by this administration. We need to keep our eyes on the ball here, Hugh. There's no question we're not doing it.
Now, John Oliott, former spokesperson for the National Security Council, deputy assistant to the president when President Trump was in office. President Biden had a press conference yesterday mostly to endorse and praise Andrew Cuomo, and we'll come to that next hour. But he also spoke about Afghanistan. Here is what he said. Cut number five, President Biden yesterday on Afghanistan.
Look, we spent over $1 trillion over 20 years. We trained and equipped with modern equipment over 300,000 Afghan forces. And Afghan leaders have to come together. We lost death and injury, thousands of American personnel. They've got to fight for themselves, fight for their nation. The United States, I'll insist we continue to keep the commitments we made of providing close air support, making sure that their Air Force functions and is operable, resupplying their forces with food and equipment, and paying all their salaries. But they've got to want to fight. They have outnumbered the Taliban, and I'm getting daily briefings. I think there is still a possibility to have a significant new Secretary of Defense, our equivalent of Secretary of Defense in Afghanistan, Bushmullah Khan, who's a serious fighter. I think they're beginning to realize they've got to come together politically at the top. But we're going to continue to keep our commitment. But I do not regret my decision.
So, John Oliott, it looks like the Taliban will overrun the country in a week. Are we providing close air support? What are we doing? They're going to kill all these interpreters. They're going to put women back in burqas. It's going to be a nightmare. And Biden promised a lot more than this, and Trump would not have withdrawn this way. Trump was going to withdraw, and I hope held on to Bagram Air Force Base, but we would have kept our commitments. What's happening?
Well, Trump did commit, and let's remind ourselves that this was announced by O'Brien back in December of this past year. It was after the election, and O'Brien said, look, President Trump's been very clear. We're going to keep our commitment of getting out, and that was by May. But you're absolutely right, Hugh. The difference is that we would have done it in a very, very disciplined way, very much getting our interpreters, getting all the people who worked for us for 20 years in some cases, and getting them out of the country, removing those out from the theater so that they're not going to be killed, their families also. And number two is also have the close air support, to your point. So if you look at the Taliban, what the Taliban has done just in the past week alone, they've taken essentially 8 of 34 regional capitals. So that's essentially 20% of the or that's actually 25% of the regional capitals that they've taken just in the last week alone. So this is an absolute collapse right now. There's no question we need to get out of there after 20 years. That was something that President Trump campaigned on. And to his credit, he did draw down the forces. But there is a difference between just getting out and essentially bugging out, grabbing your helmet and leaving, leaving our people in the lurch and doing it in a disciplined fashion, which, like everything else that President Trump did on the national security front, is something that he would have done, and he would have done it actually a lot sooner.
Well, we are bugging out, and I don't know that we're flying close combat support. I don't know. I think we have a carrier there, but Bagram, they closed Bagram. There isn't any, I don't believe there's any American aircraft taking on and off from anywhere in Afghanistan except taking a few Americans home that remain there. And our embassy could get overrun. I mean, Kabul is allegedly still being held, but I'm not sure what it's going to look like in a week. What do you think it'll look like? Last question, John Oliott. A month from now, it is now August the 11th. September 11th comes up. It's the 20th anniversary of the attack on America. What will Afghanistan look like? Like it looked on September 11th, 2001?
To your point, Hugh, I'd hate to say it, but if I'm a betting man, I say that we have dramatically scaled down, if not closed, our embassy in a month by September 11th, by the 20th anniversary, just in terms of having that capital possibly being overrun. And the only hope right now is that Zal Khalilzad is in Doha, Qatar, is that he is putting pressure, if there is pressure that can be applied, he's doing everything that he can to provide diplomatic pressure to basically say to the Taliban, if you want to be recognized and have any relations with governments around the world, then you better play nice. But that's not a big card to play. That's not a big hand to play. So to your question, I think there's a very good chance that we are completely out of there. Bagram is closed and that our embassy is also closed by September 11th.
That will be a bipartisan failure, America. Both the Bush administration and the Trump administration and the Biden administration and the Obama administration tried to build something that would last, and they have all failed, and we didn't even get our people out because Joe Biden bugged and ran. John Oliott from Brighton Strategy, thank you. I have in my hand relieffactor.com, thanks to the wonderful team at Castle Gorka. They knew I would have bolted from the studio early, and I didn't think about the relieffactor.com bag. Because when it fails, I got to get out of there very, very early. And so luckily, Bob, I think, was kind enough to give me his relief factor. So I have it in Castle Gorka. Oh, my gosh, they got hot coffee here. I should have known. Oh, that hurt. Ouch. Well, tears in my eyes. That hurt. But I did take it, but I'm now crying because what in the world? Who's ever put hot coffee? Dwayne, they actually have hot coffee. I know that concept is alien to you. I just burned my mouth, but I got the set. Oh, relieffactor.com. I sacrificed myself for relieffactor.com. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Josh Billings joins me now. Now, let me give you the backstory on this on the Hugh Hewitt Show. A couple of months ago, an account rep said, would you like to have a Celus as your client? And I said, would I like to? Where do I fly to? Who do I talk to? And so I got to talk to Josh Billings, the CEO. And a Celus, which you can find at powerhomelearning.com, is going to become a sponsor of the show. But I wanted to talk to Josh about it before I ran the first ad, so you will know why I asked them to come on the show. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be with you.
Did I get the website right, powerhomeschooling.com?
Almost. Powerhomeschool.org is the website.
Okay, that's it. That's what, powerhomeschool.org, powerhomeschool.org. I've got it up in front of me, and it's got so many courses that I neglect to look at the URL at the top. Powerhomeschool.org is not just a wonderful homeschooling organization. It actually is in 6,500 schools around the United States. Would you describe, Josh, what it does and why parents who are listening, who are disgusted with their public school system, are turning to it by the hundreds of thousands? Indeed, I think you have 3.5 million users.
Yeah, it's the Acelus Learning Accelerator, like you said, is used by 6,500 schools throughout the nation. And it's really about helping students to have successful outcomes. The Acelus program is pretty unique. Like you said, we have 400 courses, kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. But with Acelus, it's really based on science. We've called it the science of learning because we study the learning process and identify how to make it better and better. We start out in developing a course by finding the most extraordinary teachers. We're based here in Kansas City, Missouri. We fly them here. We've got 7 high-definition film studios. But we make every lesson engaging for the students. You know, we've got as many kids taking algebra on Acelus as there are people watching the Discovery Channel. So every little step of the course needs to be optimized and tuned. But then the real magic of Acelus comes in with the data piece, with something called PRISM diagnostics and efficiency diagnostics. A lot of kids that struggle have gaps or holes in their prior learning, things that they're missing that make it difficult to continue adding more learning on top. There's nowhere to connect those new concepts. And so Acelus PRISM diagnostics will identify where are those holes, where are those gaps that are holding students back, and then it completely tailors the course to meet the needs of that individual student. Two students sitting side by side taking the same course are going to get a very different experience based on what their needs are. And Acelus will even bring back, we call this vectored instruction, where it'll bring back concepts from earlier grade levels as needed, just the right lesson at just the right time to help that student be able to grasp what they need and move forward. So school districts that have put it in have seen major gains in their test scores, and it's been very successful. The Acelus Power Homeschool Program is the official program of Acelus that was created to help keep parents in control of their students' education and give them the ability to provide a quality homeschool experience for their student from home. Now, you know, it's really important if a parent chooses to homeschool that the parent have the student get on and spend enough time studying every day. I can't underscore how important that is. But with the Acelus Power Homeschool Program, they have the ability to have access to over 400 courses, K through 12. And it's really effective for these struggling students, students with learning disabilities, because it's a homeschool learning accelerator.
Now, what I want people to understand is last night, I told you in the first hour of the show, the Loudoun County School Board locked hundreds of parents out in a thunderstorm that was actually dangerous because they're so upset with criticism coming in. And homeschooling has taken off. But a lot of people have resolved to fix their kids' education at home. And this, by the way, is CRT in California. It's CRT in Georgia. It's CRT in Virginia. It's everywhere. And people can fix their kids' education, keep them in the public school, but they could enroll in powerhomeschool.org and get a civics and social science curriculum to fix the problem. Indeed, you can do your whole education. I mean, you can completely homeschool K through 12 using powerhomeschool.org, or you can get one course, and they go from kindergarten to AP calculus. Am I not correct about that, Josh?
Oh, that is absolutely correct. There's 17 AP courses. So for an advanced student, it's an incredible opportunity to accelerate the student's learning and get into these advanced subjects. We actually have both years of calculus, so AP Calculus AB and BC.
The reason I bring that in Virginia, I've covered this with the Republican candidate for governor, Glenn Youngkin. The school board said they would the state school board said there would no longer be accelerated math before the 11th grade. They're bringing equity to the classroom by taking out any opportunity to excel at math. Now, I think that's absolutely positively nuts because I myself wasn't bad at math. And I know a lot of people who are genius at math. So powerhomeschool.org, if you are a genius in the third grade, your system is going to spot it via the algorithms you deploy and accelerate that student's ability to master the craft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It really helps these students to be able to go in. And, you know, I just want to say that we're at a very challenging time in education. You know, there's a statistic that has come out from the U.S. Census Bureau that the number of homeschooling families this year, the number of children homeschooling is increasing to 5 million, which could place a burden of $50 billion in losses of public school funding to homeschooling. And, you know, Hugh, that's of concern because a lot of those, too many of those cuts are going to come to the teachers. And if we lose our great teachers in this nation, it's really going to be a hardship on this country. That's why Acelus has created a program called Acelus Cyber School, where we're helping parents to be able to have the control and autonomy they're looking for in being at home, but helping connect those students with their local school districts so that it gives, you know, both the parent the opportunity to be able to homeschool, but also allows them to stay involved with the district, allows them to graduate through their district. And so it's certainly a very unique time in education. And again, it's just so important to help our children to study hard and to navigate the challenges that they have. But with tools like Acelus, we can help them to be successful.
Yeah, and I want people to understand, Power Homeschool is not ideological. That's why I wanted them in. They're not left wing. They're not right wing. They're not any wing. They are for the student, for the parent, for the teacher. They are in schools and they are out of schools. They serve everybody. They are educators first, last, and always. How many students? I know you're in 6,500 schools. That means, you know, it's been accepted by all of the people who deal education for a living. But how many people are using Acelus for their students at home?
We reach a total student audience of about 3.5 million students. So within that, that includes all of the students in the public school system, et cetera. We don't have a number broken out that we publish separately for the homeschoolers. But I will tell you, Hugh, it's significant.
And so, by the way, it costs money, but it is so reasonable. I am enrolling my grandkids in it, and they're still in school. They're in public schools, great public schools, but they're smart kids. And that's just a grandparent talking. You can dismiss that. I want them to move fast as they are. One of them is a classic first child who is as, you know, smart as her mom, and she needs this. And she goes to a magnet school, powerhomeschool.org, still $25 a month. Seven courses are available. Have I got that right, Joshua Billings?
Absolutely right.
And it's up front, $25 a month, seven courses. And those seven courses you pick and choose. And so if you've got three kids in the house and you each want them to have two courses, can they do that, Joshua?
Yeah, you can use as many of those seven as you want. And it's not just the core subject areas as well. We have electives available, things like foreign languages, but one of the biggest interests lately has been in STEM. There's such a need to help more and more students prepare for careers in STEM. And the Acelus STEM 10 initiative helps students beginning as early as third grade to begin to learn how to code. It's so important. Many of the best jobs require coding skills. And so students can get in with our STEM program and with the robotics and be able to really learn how to code. We start with the basics, and then we get more and more advanced. It's actually a 10-year pathway to help those students become truly proficient in those areas so they're career ready.
I always tell people that opportunity exists at the intersection of need and technology. PowerHomeschool.org has set up shop there 10 years ago, and now they have 6,500 schools, 3 million kids, and they've got Hugh Hewitt behind them because I want your student and my students to do well. And you will do that at PowerHomeschool.org. They'll be a sponsor. They're not yet a sponsor. They will be a sponsor because I believe in PowerHomeschool.org. Joshua Billings, thank you. I'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
People sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving. Ain't no use joking.
Welcome back, America. Normally, I joke with Congressman Michael Gallagher about the pitiful Packers, but not this morning because everything is broken in Afghanistan. It is actually a tragedy unfolding before our eyes. Congressman Mike Gallagher serves on the Armed Services Committee of the House of Representatives, a member of the Nixon Seminar. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Well, I've been without power here for about 12 hours in Green Bay, and I know you're going to turn that into a Packers joke because Wayne tried to do the same thing to me earlier, but we're getting by. We're getting by, Hugh.
What is Aaron Rodgers in charge of the repair effort? He's not showing up for minicamp. He's not there for the training camp, so I assume he's not.
He's back. He's back. All's well in Packer world.
Jordan Love is taking all the snaps, friend. You know that. He's taking all the snaps. It's a matter of time till he's gone, the Rodgers era setting. But seriously, the Afghan stuff, let's concentrate on that. I have never seen us bug out this way since 1975. This is the worst. And we're just running away, Mike Gallagher.
Well, 1975, I think, is the opposite analogy. I mean, this is the Saigon moment, and it is going to have an adverse impact on American deterrence around the world. If you're watching the way in which this is being done, you're questioning America's commitment to our friends, commitment to our allies on the ground who fought with us. And I would say this, reasonable people can disagree about our force presence in Afghanistan, how quickly to wind down, whether we need an enduring presence. I am for an enduring presence that secures Kabul and Bagram and allows us to conduct not just counterterrorism operations, but great power competition in the region, particularly given China's interest in Pakistan and the Gwadar port. However, I don't think anybody, even the most ardent proponent of getting out of Afghanistan can defend the way in which this is being done and just how ham-handed it is. Everything from just announcing the withdrawal on, you know, the anniversary of September 11th to not having a plan for taking care of, you know, the SIP visa issue for interpreters that risk their lives to work with us. This has been an absolute disaster from the White House. And again, I just fear it's going to undermine the credibility of America's deterrent around the world, not just in Afghanistan.
It's a bug out. Biden's bug out. And this was not what Trump proposed. I've talked to the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, who served under President Trump. They intended to leave. They intended to leave an Afghanistan that was intact, supported by air support. And this is a bug out. And by that, I don't even think the embassy will be open in a month, Mike Gallagher. Do you?
No. I mean, look, we already have half a dozen of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capital cities that have fallen to the Taliban since late last week. I mean, this is happening at a much more rapid pace than our intelligence community predicted, but it should have been predictable given the speed with which we bugged out. I mean, it's just a heartbreaking disaster. And, Hugh, if the goal was to free up resources to focus on China, focus on the Indo-Pacific theater, an understandable goal, was actually counterproductive to that effort because we have been forced to send a carrier from the Indo-Pacific to cover the withdrawal. I think the first time since the early 2000s that we've had to do that. Because we are now trying to adopt some overwatch posture in Afghanistan, that means we're going to further stress our Navy and Air Force assets, which are precisely the assets that you will need in the Indo-Pacific theater. So it fails on its own terms. It fails under the idea that you're trying to free up resources for the China fight, because it's not freeing up resources for the China fight. This is a surrender. It is a black mark on U.S. foreign policy. And if you add on to that, just the overall confusion of our policy in the Middle East, the confusion of friends and enemies, and the really pathetic attempt to resuscitate the lifeless corpse of the Iran deal, you're going to see another disaster in the Middle East that will screw up our entire ability to get serious and tough on China, because we're going to be forced to deal with chaos in a second priority theater.
The Biden bug out also reminds of Jimmy Carter, because at the same time that we are withdrawing from the world and allowing chaos to reign, we are not spending anything on defense. I can't even believe that we have $1 trillion in infrastructure, $3.5 trillion in additional spending voted last night. It hadn't come to the House yet, but something will pass. They're going to spend trillions of dollars on top of the $3 to $4 trillion we spent last year. So $8 trillion, more than we spent on World War II and one combined in the Vietnam War. And there's no money for defense in that. There's no plus up. It's unbelievable that the Democrats have really adopted, we're going to be a left-wing socialist European country with no defense.
At the highest levels of spending since World War II, as you point out, but they are unwilling to spend the minimum necessary to prevent World War III. I mean, that is the bottom line right there. I mean, the Dems voted against an amendment from Wicker and Inhofe. It would have added a modest $50 billion for defense, including $25 billion for shipyards. Is that not critical infrastructure right there? I mean, this thing includes Green New Deal policies that would tax American energy producers. I mean, the American energy revolution has given us this massive geopolitical gift, and it seems as if we're intent on squandering that gift. I mean, this includes a program to push U.S. to receive 80% of electricity from clean sources by 2030, according to the Wall Street Journal. And then on to that, I mean, this would just completely exacerbate our debt crisis and expand our welfare state and bring us closer to being a European-style socialist country, as you point out, Hugh.
No, it's a triumph of the left. I don't want to, even as the Kabul route, even as the Taliban route every Afghan nationalist force, the left has routed the center right. And it's a route. And I don't want people to in any way understand it as other than that. It's a rout last night. And a rout means we are going back to Carterism, which is except without an advantage, a qualitative advantage over the Soviet Union existing over China. We are going back. We are disarming when we are at a qualitative disadvantage in some areas and precariously ahead in others. It's a defining moment for the country. And we told people, Mike Gallagher, we told them, and they didn't believe us.
Yeah, Joe Biden was supposed to be this moderate who, you know, would bring back the halcyon days of bipartisanship. Well, there is nothing moderate about this agenda from day one. I mean, Biden was bragging about passing the most progressive piece of legislation since the New Deal with the last coronavirus bill. I mean, this is a radical left agenda. And to connect the two, Afghanistan and this domestic blowout, Hugh, I'm reminded of Obama's first consequential speech on Afghanistan policy at the Eisenhower Theater at West Point, if memory serves correctly, where he uttered the infamous phrase, you know, we're going to focus less on nation building abroad and we're going to focus on nation building at home. Well, I don't even think Obama in his wildest dreams would have imagined this level of progressive socialist nation building at home. I mean, this is just another level of spending, of the government picking winners and losers, of taxing business owners and hardworking Americans, raising energy prices. This is a reckless agenda. We need to push back. This no doubt, we can comfort ourselves slightly because this means that Republicans at a minimum will win back the House. I can almost guarantee you that unless we massively screw it up. But we have so much work to do if we are put in charge to undo the destructive nature of this agenda, that we need to start coming up with our agenda to counter it right now. I mean,
let me start with this. I thought the Republicans gave up too soon last night. They could have gone a lot longer, and they didn't. And they're old guys in the Senate mostly, and they couldn't hold the floor and give. I wanted them to go for 2 weeks with amendments to focus on this terrible deal. Now there's going to be a debt limit crisis because McConnell has said, if you don't put the debt limit in the reconciliation bill, we ain't passing it. And that's the credibility of the Senate caucus on the line now. Will the Republicans hold firm and not pass a debt limit? You know, you'll get hammered by the media, but it's the only way to stop this. This is a complete transformation of the country. Will the Republicans shut the government down?
Well, we have to hold firm. I mean, obviously in the House, we're a pure majoritarian body. So if they have all the votes, they have enough votes on their side, they don't need us, right? But in the Senate, I mean, it gets a little bit trickier for the Democrats. So we have to hold firm. I don't like to put much faith. Even my baby daughter's crying. She's so distraught. Yep. About this spending here. I mean, it's a 13-month-old. That's how much we've fallen here.
Well, she knows how much she's in debt. I think she owes the federal government something like $700,000. Every kid in America owes that much money.
We've robbed from Grace Gallagher. She's very distraught. But we have to hold the line here. We absolutely have to hold the line. And our Republican senators need to do whatever is possible. I think the conceptual mistake they made from the beginning was conceiving of these bills as two separate bills, the infrastructure bill and then the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, when, of course, the Democrats had always linked them. Nancy Pelosi had explicitly talked about linking them, as had President Biden. And so we have to consider this as one giant progressive package, not in isolation, and have to do everything possible, wielding every parliamentary tool at our disposal to hold the line, because this will fundamentally transform America. I believe this will fundamentally transform America, not for the better, for the much, much, much worse.
No, it's a defeat of freedom. But I am hopeful that McConnell, I would have voted for the $1 trillion in infrastructure as a proof that the Republicans will do a lot with the new president, more than I would normally do, to try and stop the $3.5 trillion in the transformation. But it didn't work. Sinema and Manchin went along with it. Didn't work. We put everything on Sinema, Manchin, Hassan, Feinstein, and they all voted for a repeal of freedom. And they really did. It's that radical. I want you to have the last word. I'm not given to hyperbole. It's a complete redoing of America.
No, I agree with you. I guess on infrastructure, I would only say, look how far and quickly the goalpost has shifted. Because in my freshman term in the 115th Congress in 2017, we were talking about a $200 billion infrastructure bill. And so that's massively, you know, what, 4X in just a matter of years. What did you talk about in your book as a grand bipartisan bargain back then? I mean, this the price keeps going up and up and up. And you got to get at the fundamental issue, which is why our infrastructure costs so much, is because you need regulatory reform. And that's what Trump did. Trump had a very ambitious NEPA regulatory reform agenda. That's the real bipartisan foundation for infrastructure. It's reg reform in return for a smart investment of money.
People don't want that. What they're getting is a massive expansion of government employees who will enjoy comfortable incomes and benefits for life. The country is splitting into those who work for the government and those who don't. And that is the bottom line. Mike Gallagher, not a happy day. Follow him at Rep Gallagher. Follow him as the Packers sunset. They used to be able to take solace in the Packers. That's gone for the poor folk of Wisconsin. But we'll continue to talk. I talk with Brian Westbury next. Don't go anywhere, America. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. On October the 13th, Brian Westbury and I are going to be in Atlanta. AM 920, The Answer, is bringing us there so we can talk about the Biden inflation at the Atlanta History Center. Get your tickets at AM920TheAnswer.com. I love Atlanta. I love going down there. Westbury, though, I'm going to have to give him the bulk of the time because the inflation problem, which is already immense after last night's vote for $3.5 trillion and more spending on top of the trillion of infrastructure, I really don't know where inflation is going to be, but Brian is going to know. Brian, what did we do last night? I think we shot ourselves in the American foot collectively.
Yes, Hugh, it is amazing. Yeah, I literally did not expect to see this for months. And the games, I'm sure you've already talked about it, but the games in Washington, D.C., I'm like in shock trying to catch up with nobody knows what's in this thing. But the games that are playing, you know, we thought that if they got the trillion, they wouldn't go so fast for the 3.5.
That's what, yep. But they took it, and then they said, give us another $3.5 trillion, and they did. They took it. What's going to happen to the economy? I mean, taxes are going up on everyone a lot. And don't believe this millionaires-only crap. That's not true. The Green New Deal's in there. S1's in there. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So if you go back in history, you know, people are saying, is this LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson? Is this FDR? Is it the New Deal? Is it the Great Society? You know, this is the Build Back Better, Great Reset plan. And if we kind of look back in history, and I'm not trying to say this or be happy talk here, but we were eventually able to absorb those increases in government spending. We were. Now, the 70s, we had lots of inflation. We had lots more unemployment. We went through a lot of pain. But then once we got to Reagan and even into Clinton, things got a lot better. So today, if you kind of think about the cloud, blockchain, 5G rolling out, 6G probably after that, the Starlink satellite system going up, the, you know, new biotech inventions. I mean, we're a very productive, immensely wealthy country. And I'm not making an excuse for doing the things that have been done in the last 24 hours, but that's the offset. Because we're so productive, because we're so wealthy, this isn't like going to throw us immediately off the cliff into another Great Depression, let's say. So we just have to look at it. What kind of tax hikes are these? How much, I mean, will this really pass all the way through? We don't know yet. The rules haven't completely changed yet. Boy, it looks like the Senate right now doesn't care one whit about our kids and grandkids and how many taxes they're going to have to pay in the future.
I'm talking with Brian Westbury, chief economist for First Trust Portfolio, one of the great investment advisory firms in America. Brian and I will be in Atlanta on October the 13th. By then, we will have a clearer vision into the future as to how bad this will be. But I want to tell you, Brian, last night I was texting with one of my dear friends, one of the smartest liberals in America. And I'll say he's a classic liberal who is worried about the right wing and its militant nature and worried about the insurrection, et cetera. And I said, well, I'm worried about the left and I'm worried about inflation. He said, well, we're not, what do you think, Weimar Republic? And I said, I don't know, but we do have the preconditions set here when you print this much money. Are we in danger of Weimar Republic-like inflation unleashing here?
Yeah, I guess you could always get there. I mean, governments have done this before, you know, in Zimbabwe and in Germany and the Weimar Republic. And the 70s were really bad in the U.S. We never got to the Weimar type of inflation. I would argue right now I would not make that prediction. What's interesting, you look at the stock market, right now, it is not collapsing. Oil prices are actually going down today and this morning. And so, I wish I had a better answer right now. They passed a blueprint. They didn't actually pass this real budget. It's not like the Nancy Pelosi can grab it, pass it, and the president signs it, it's over. This is still going to be a months-long process. But, you know, they did get Joe Manchin to say, hey,
And Kristen Sinema and Maggie Hassan and Raphael Warnock and Mark Kelly, all the alleged moderates and the most endangered Democrats, all said, yeah, I'll take the hit. And so I am stunned. I'm actually kind of stunned.
Yeah.
I am
too, Hugh. I will tell you, I did not see that. I mean, I didn't see this coming. And so I'm sort of at a loss for words this morning. But all I'll tell you is that there's always two forces in the history of man. Redistribution, which is what this bill is, and versus wealth creation. And that battle, the battle between wealth creation and redistribution is the history of man. It's the history of the United States. And so here we go again. We did the New Deal. We did the Great Society.
October 13th, Brian and I will be in Atlanta to talk about it. Go to am920theanswer.com to get tickets. Thank you, Brian Westbury. Follow him on Twitter at Westbury.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.